Date's October 29th, 2001. I'm interviewing Jack Beezer at Lincoln Place Community Center. My name is Rance Oligus. This is tape one, side B. And Jack is going to talk about his family life.
Well, like I say, you know, when I graduated in 47 from high school, I was kind of glad that, you know, that I at least went through the high school, and I could tell you that it was no pleasant experience for me, because for some reason or another, we, like I say, you were from Lincoln Place, you were on the other side of the track, and that's all there was to it. And most of your teachers would let you know it too. But one thing I did do in high school is take up drafting courses. When I went out there, I wanted to be a chemist. But then I took a little bit of shop, to give you a little bit of each shop in order to try to find out what you liked the best. And I put that drafting pencil in my hand, it just felt good, like it belonged there. So that's what I wanted to be. But like I say, at that time, most of the men had come back from World War II. It was hard finding a job, so I went to work for a company called International Shoe. And I worked a total of 5 years for them, and then finally I got drafted into the Korean War. And I went over to Korea. And I'm not going to even say too much about Korea, except that being out there, sometimes it made me sick because of the way some of the people live, and I really felt sorry for them. A little later, I'll just give a little bit more reference to that Korean War, but right now, we'll stick with how I fared, just where I ended up. But anyhow, I worked for International Shoe, and they made some promises for me that when I went into service, that when I come back, that they were going to do for me. When I came back, it just didn't happen. And one of the deals was that if I ever got married, I'd get a $5 raise. Well, when I got married, I only got $2.50, and that really steamed me. But anyhow, I finally seen an ad in the paper for a draftsman for McDonnell Aircraft. And my wife got me applications that I filled out, and I finally got an interview with McDonnell Aircraft, and they gave me a test, a drafting test, and I scored very high on that, and they hired me. And they hired me at a salary that was almost double what I was making at International Shoe. So I went back and I told them that I was giving them 2 weeks' notice. And the boss at that time, he asked me, he says, "Well, what do they offer you? Maybe we could match it." I says, "I wouldn't even want to tell you what they're going to give me, because I think I'd embarrass you too much. So we just forget you made that remark, but I can't refuse the job." So I went and worked for them, and it was nice. I liked working out there, and I would have really liked to have stuck with them, mainly because I kind of like aircrafts, you know. And I could feel that, you know, the only thing that I didn't like about the place was that every time a little something would happen, well, they'd lay off people, and I seemed to get laid off always. And the way it seems like they worked that thing was that when you got laid off the first time, your IBM card had a little punch in there, and it says, "Laid off." Okay. I was fortunate every month or so that I was out of work there, I'd get hired back again in some other position, but back with the company. When I got laid off again, it seemed like they threw all these cards into the machine, and the thing is, we're going to find out who were laid off, because they've already been laid off, so they're used to it. So now your card fell out again. So they said, "Well, every third one that falls out of there, we're going to lay them off." So they'd count. Not always seemed to be in there. So I got that 5 years, I think I got laid off about 3 times. Always got a job back with them. But anyhow, the fourth time that I got laid off, I start looking for another job. And I was looking for what they call the Mark Building, which was on Tucker Boulevard in St. Louis, right next to the police academy. And there was some job descriptions that they were writing up that they needed draftsmen, and these guys thought that I would fit the bill. But they had got the okay on the job description, so I told them, I said, well, I'm kind of worried, I'm laid off, and I need the money. And the Corps of Engineers in the Oakland Bank Building want to hire me as a draftsman, but they want to hire me as a GS-5, and you're offering GS-7s. I'd rather have the GS-7s. But the guy said, well, look at it this way. Why don't you go work for them? And when we get these job descriptions, we'll give you a call. He says, you wouldn't mind coming over here for a promotion, would you? I said, no. I said, well, okay, fine. So I went back and told him at the Oakland Bank Building I'd accept the job. So I waited and waited and waited, and hey, these guys never did phone me back from the Mark Building. So I phoned them and I told them, I said, you guys think you would let me know, when these jobs are filled and going to be filled. And I said, I hear now that they're already filled, and you hadn't even informed me anything about it. He says, well, we would have liked to have Jack. He says, except for one thing. We got notice from the government that what we needed to do was fill positions to get people off of the unemployment line, And you were working already. And so, it just happened that that's the way it had to work out. That we had to take somebody from outside that wasn't working. So I was really teed off because I lost 2 grades that way. But as it turned out, it's probably one of the luckiest breaks I ever had, because I got into a department and I was in electrical design, and I loved the job that I had. I mean, it was just wonderful. I felt like no matter what they asked me to do, I could do it, And I did this job for 23 years. I worked in the office. And I elevated my grade from a GS-5 all the way up to a GS-11 technician, from a draftsman general to a technician. And I was the first person in design branch to get the grade of GS-11 technician. Nobody else was that high. But shucks, it seemed like once we had this Nixon in there and he got caught with this building that they burglarized, and it got to a be that if you were for government, you were a nobody. That all you were out there for is to take the taxpayers' money and not give anything, for the money you were getting, which was a total lie. But anyhow, I stuck with them for about 2 years after all of this stuff going around, and the atmosphere in the group too, and the other groups inside the Corps of Engineers was getting to a point where it was starting to bother me. I began to get as gloomy as everybody. So I said, boy, this is no way to feel. So I found out that there was a job opening up over in Alton, Illinois, on the new Lock and Dam 26 that they were building on Mississippi here. So I went up to see the group where they had the person that hired all the people that went to work in the field for the Corps of Engineers. And he told me, he said, well, Jack, I'll tell you what. We'll give you this opportunity to go out there and work, but I'll tell you what it'll be a before 90-day tour. He said, I'll tell you why I'm going to do that. He said, I want you to go out there and I want you to work. When your 90 days they're complete, and you like the work that you're doing, and you want to stay out there, fine. We'll write up papers to have you transferred just like that. And he said, but if you go out there and you work and you don't like it, after 90 days, that job that you had with the electrical section will no longer be there for you. You'll be offered to somebody else. So I said, well, that sounds reasonable. It's pretty nice. So I tried it. The boss that I was working for up there, before I even had 60 days done, called me into the office and he asked me, he says, are you serious about working out here? And I says, well, I wouldn't have come out here unless I thought, you know, I was serious about it. So he says, well, we'd like to write up paperwork on you to have you transferred from design branch out here to construction as an electrical inspector. How you feel about that? He said, be my guest. So you know, doggone it, I was the luckiest guy in the world because I found a second job that I loved. So now here it was that I filled in 34 years with the government and loved the jobs I had. How good were those jobs? When I went to work, I'd whistle. That's how happy I was. I was really just the happiest and most content one person you ever seen in your life. And I loved the people I worked with. The Corps of Engineers and people there that were so talented and scared the living daylights out of me. I could think of only one time that I really felt bad, and that was when I worked for McDonnell Aircraft. That they had a guy that was working there that I looked at and I thought, Jesus, this guy looks like he ought to be in back of a plow with a mule, you know. That's what he looked. I mean, just absolutely dunce. So one day, they put me to work with this guy. He was the lead man. And God, I'm working here one day and I said, you know, by golly, this guy is the second thing to a genius. I mean, he was the smartest son of a gun I have ever seen in my life. I mean, that he was intelligent. He really was. But one thing I liked about having done these things that I did and criticized this guy was the fact that I found out what you first do is take a look at the person. The next day thing you do is find out what he does. And the next thing you find out, does he do it well? If he does it well, don't criticize him, you know. And so I stopped criticizing people like that. I said, well, I got to a point where I just felt that every person had value. You just had to find out what that value was. And I learned this quite young. So I was real tickled because it helped me all the way through my career. Why did I leave the Corps of Engineers? I didn't have to. I could have stayed. Could have stayed longer than I did. But at that time, they were having a hard time trying to get new people into the Corps of Engineers. And people like me were holding them back. They couldn't fire me because they'd take an act of Congress. So what they did is they came to me one day and they said, we're trying to keep some of our younger player people, so I'll tell you what. If you guys, the ones that are older ones, and I wasn't the only one that was at this meeting, there was about 8 of us. And they said, if you guys retire, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll give you a $25,000 incentive to leave the Corps of Engineers and retire. So I sat there and I thought, hey, $25,000, that's awful hard to put in the bank, even with the salary I was making. Well, how good was my salary? I could tell you that when I worked, Saturdays or overtime, I was the highest paid employee in the Corps of Engineers. I'm not kidding. It's no lie. But anyhow, like I say, I took a look at the $25,000 and it swayed me. If I had to do it again, would I do it again? No. I was a much happier person working. I don't want to do that. I don't.
Didn't work at all after that?
Like I say, when they offered me this money, heck, it was like 2 weeks and we were out of Corps of Engineers, eight of us. Everybody I was at that meeting retired. But even in retirement, I can't complain too much about what I'm getting. You know, retirement is pretty damn good money for a person that ain't doing anything, see. So I make about $2,000 a month, plus about another $153 from Social Security, and that's clear. Take the taxes and everything and put it back into that. When I retired with 66 2/3% of my salary. Just for good. Can't complain about that. But I just feel, now that I'm retired, I just feel like I'm of no importance.
Been living in Lincoln Place ever since.
You know, I don't know how you feel, but when you have a job that has importance to it, you begin to feel very, very important yourself, you know. And when they take that away from you, you're lost. I'm not kidding, you're lost. And that's what it was with me. I did a lot of schooling with the government. I went to different places. I was on projects with different engineering Corps of Engineering establishments. Like we did a job for Omaha, Nebraska. We did another one down in Louisiana. Our primary job in the Corps of Engineers was to, well, I shouldn't say to, but was in flood protection. We were there strictly for flood protection. We built, during the time I was with the Corps, 63 different pumping stations down the Illinois side and Missouri side of the river that pumped storm water sewage and all that out to the river on High River Stage. We had 5 different locks and dams that we took care of. We had 4 reservoirs that we built. And one of them is in Hannibal, Missouri. It's sort of like a small Tom Salk. And it's a beautiful place. If you ever get a chance, get up around Hannibal and you'll run across a little town they call Center. Very easy to remember, Center. And you turn off and you go into Center and you'll come out there to this reservoir up there. And it's beautiful. It's a turbine job. That turbine's up there, creates electricity. Like I say, there's a lot of things I did for the Corps that it really made my job a lot of fun.
So why did you decide to stay in Lincoln Place and live here?
Pardon me?
Why did you decide to stay in Lincoln Place and live here?
Well, I looked at a house in, I guess you wouldn't call it even East Granite, not West Granite. But anyhow, closer to Ponton Beach here. And it was a big house, 2-story house. And the size of the rooms and everything impressed me. But I am not a pretty good carpenterist, you know. So what I did, I took my dad to see this. So he didn't say nothing much while I was talking to the guy that owned the place. My dad would walk around and look at the building down in the basement and so on. And after a while, he called me over to his side. He said, I want to show you something. So I said, okay. So they had a door that was on the side of the house that led to a driveway. It was a gravel driveway. And he goes up to it and he opens the door and he takes the side of the jam and he starts hitting it with his fist. And he says, you hear that? I said, hear what? He said, listen real close. So he hits it. I said, sorry, sounds awful. Why? He says, you know what's happening? He says, no. He says, step back from the house, I'll show you. He says, what's happening? His termites took that jam and it ate up that jam. Up to the second story, followed the 2x4, and went up to the roof. He said, now look at that paper, roofing paper and everything that's on this house, shingles. And he says, notice how it lays in the gutter like? I said, yeah. He said, they already ate away the ends of that house over there. He says, this house is going to cost you some money to really fix it up, you know, to be a house that you'd like to live in. He says, cost you too much. So somehow I found out about this lot that I have here now, and the guy that owned the lot was actually a guy that helped. He was the top honcho in building this community center in a lot of beautiful homes, that brick homes that are down in this community. Mm-hmm. He's built. He was a doggone good carpenter and a construction man. But anyhow, he helped me with this house, and actually the lot was his. He sold me the lot for $1,000. I couldn't buy in a lot anywhere for $1,000. This one had the sewer, the gas, everything was right there. All I had to do was dig at the edge of the sidewalk where he told me to dig, and I found a gas line, I found a sewer line, found everything, you know, that took to connect up to the house. And this, you know, approximately saved me, well, I'd say $2,000 if I had to have the city come and plug the sewer, not plug it, but open it up for a sewer for me. And then same thing with the gas and everything, it would have cost me. But I saved that kind of money. And this guy helped me build that house. I didn't pay him a penny. He'd come over and he'd say, only reason I come here, he says, is because I like your dad. I says, I'll tell you something, if you like my dad, I like you too, you know, because my dad likes you. Mm-hmm. I say, I don't want to say anything, you know, more, because I don't want to get you mad or say the wrong thing. But this guy would actually come down and help me build this house. And I'm thankful I had him. The money that I save on property tax living down here would make up for the money I would lose if I tried to sell the house. Because if I built anywhere in Granite, I could tell you that that time that I built my house, which was in the 60s, it would have run me approximately $4,000 for a lot. And again, your utilities you'd have to have put in, so that's going to cost you extra for that. To have a contractor come down and build a home on it, it would have been unheard of even for me to try to even build a home, you know. Mm-hmm. So by building it down here and getting a permit and having the people to help me, like my uncle, my brother, me, his contractor, and my dad, I built that house, material, bought all the material, $15,000. Put that house up for that amount of money. Now, you notice it excludes labor, but the labor was free. Add the labor to it, and it would have run me about the same price as what I would have paid for the material. In those days, it would run about 50-50, so that would have been another $15,000. It would have been a $30,000 house, plus $1,000 I paid for the lot. If I try to build that anywhere else in Granite, you could take that $30,000 in 1960 and double it. It would cost me about $60,000 to build a house. And not like they're building now. I mean, when you're talking about building, your homes were very modest. You know, if you went inside my house, I've got a living room, I've got a kitchen, two bedrooms, a bathroom, two rooms up above that were bedrooms, but my kids are gone, so they're no longer used. But I don't have a dining room. My dining room is my kitchen. That's the way I lived when I was born. That's the kind of house my father had. It's the kind of house I built. But nowadays, it's nothing now to go down and look at a house and they want $180,000 for it, It's really expensive. So, all I can say, to a person is, hey, if you've got the ability and the know-how to get through college, by all means do it. Because that's the only way you're going to buy one like that. Because that's the person that's going to have the money, is the guy that's educated. Your steel mills, who knows, someday you might go down here in Grand City Steel and not see a person, just a bunch of robots running around, That's the kind of society that you're growing up with. I'm not happy with it. I left engineering, and I haven't told you that portion, but I'll mention it now, that I didn't like computers. I didn't like the automated drafting machines. And the reason for it was everything that it put out was identical. The names were different, but the printing, the way it was drawn and everything was all drawn the same way. I lost my individuality. I had practiced my printing for 20 some odd years to a point where I had beautiful upper and lower case printing, And I had a certain way I did my drawings that made them unique. That drafting machine, it wasn't unique. It was the same all the way through. So I kind of didn't like that. And that's one of the reasons why I left, too.
Now, you talked about how everything's been changing. How do you think this community has changed since you started living here?
Well, I tell you, the good people are gone. I mean, it burns me up because it seems like all I do nowadays is carry them out to the graveyard. And you don't see these people out here on the streets and on the sidewalk talking like they used to, like these foreign people, no matter what they were doing, always had the time to come out and say hello to you, shake hands with you, talk a little bit with you, Just was a wonderful life. They helped one another. You don't find that too much. What amazed me is that I could remember going to this one guy's house and I asked him, well, this was before I built the house that I own now. But anyhow, I'd ask him, well, how's your neighbors? He says, I don't know, I never see the guy. I says, well, don't you talk to your neighbors? He says, you don't want to talk to me, I don't want to talk to him. That's the way it is, No closeness,
Like it used to be.
Yeah, it's all gone. When I was a kid, I used to remember families would gather together, like my family, Christ. There was three different families here. They're all the same, they're Visers, But my grandfather was in the Hungarian Hussars, and he told me, which was the Hungarian infantry, he says, this is the way we spelled our name in Hungary, and this is the way I'm going to spell it here. Now, the reason some of them changed was the fact that there was too much Johns, too many Louis, and you got letters, mail mixed up in Christ. You'd sit there and you'd read a letter and say, well, who the heck is this? I don't know. And find out it was for some other relative here in the community. But anyhow, see, down here they decided they're going to split the way they spell their names, so. My family's stuck with the V-I-Z-E-R. Then another family took V-E-I-Z-E-R, which spells the same way, Visa. The third family group took W-E-I-Z-E-R, Weezers. But they're all Weezers. We're all related. We used to have big barbecues, and the whole clan was out there. You know what I mean? You don't see that no more. There's few people that go out maybe with a friend and barbecue out at the Pyramid Marquette or someplace like that. Listen, when we went to Pyramid Marquette, we took over. I mean to tell you, you know, so many people were out there. And all nice people, just, you know, just wonderful. They knew what sweat was, you know. People today, they don't know what sweat is.
They worked hard and kept the community.
Somebody said, it's bad, it stinks. I said, you know, some, to me it smells like roses. I said, then you could tell a guy's really giving up, you know. So that way the neighbors change. Like I say, I get to a point now where I don't, I'm beginning to fear that one of these days I'm gonna get one of these people to move next door to me, and I ain't gonna wanna talk to him, and he ain't gonna wanna talk to me, you know. Although my time's kind of running out, you know, I don't think I'll see that day, but could happen. I don't know, you know, you just see things that, like buildings that we had down here, they're deteriorated and tore down, and nobody even tried to do anything to try to save that building or try to make that building fit to live in again. And what's happening here is the city comes in, tears this damn place down, and here you've got a basement in there, instead of tearing out the concrete in that basement and filling it with dirt and making it just a beautiful lot that somebody might want to buy and build a home on. People won't do it because they know that thing's got a foundation and it wasn't taken out. It's going to cost them a fortune to have it removed so they could build a home on it. And it gets me mad that that's the way they do all over Grand. I don't know where you got your education from, whether you're from Granite or...
No, I'm from a small town called Breeze.
Breeze? Yeah. Breeze, Illinois? Sure, I know where that is. It's out to Woods Corral. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice town, a little Sleepy Hollow one. But heck, I could remember Carlisle was like that until we built the reservoir there. Mm-hmm. Now it looks pretty nice.
Yeah. Now I'm living in O'Fallon now.
But
I'm moving out this way, slowly.
But I'll tell you something. I could tell you that I couldn't have made it through college. And the reason for it is my math was bad. But I never had people that I could go to when I was in had problems with math that would help me out, like most of the kids are, you know. They're friends and they stick together and they work their assignments together and everything, you know. I never had that. And it made it kind of difficult for me. But I'll tell you something. I could tell you this, that I could kick myself right in the seat of the pants for not trying. I should have tried. It's too late now, you know. Somebody said, well, why didn't you when you got married? I said, you try doing schoolwork with three kids that's raising hell with the wife. I said, not so easy to do. So, like I say, it took working with the government and the fact that they sent me to school that I got confidence that I could do things, you know, that and get by with them that I was as adult and sometimes as the other guys were. I had to take a national electric course, which is a book about so thick. It's got about 500 and some odd pages. If you can memorize everything that's in there, you can write your own check but I found out that I scored sometimes higher than the engineer. But then again, too, I have to be honest and say there's some portions of it when I read, I can't even interpret. I'd have to have an engineer to interpret it for me. So we all have a value, but gee, I tell you, I'd give anything if this neighborhood would only be like it was when I was a kid. I would. I could sit here on a corner on a summer day, and it's just like going to a movie. I could see every one of the guys I grew up with, and I could start remembering things, just like flashback, you know, and say, gee, you know, that was a great time. Where in the heck are these people?
Well, I guess that about does it. Thank you for the interview.
Well, I thank you for having it. I'm sorry somebody told you I played with the basketball team here. I don't know who would have told you that, but
still a great interview. Thank you.
I'll tell you, if you want more information on Andy Phillips, I don't know what connections you got with trying to get over to the Grand City High School, but they have a building out there that they call their Hall of Fame, like, you know. And there's a lot of stuff in there about Andy Phillips, some of the other athletes that they had here. See, because the thing I didn't say here, and I should have, because we had a kid like a Bulgarian kid that lived down here, named is Gilbert Georgiou. He's a darn good basketball player. Norma Martinez, not Norma, but Joe. Joe Martinez, he was another good basketball player. And they played here at Granite and had a doggone good team in Granite here too, except that it seemed like when they got to like a championship game or something like that, or close to a championship game, there's always be some little error that lost it for them. The guy that I was talking about, he's the principal at Hillsborough High School in Hillsborough, Missouri. Good friend of mine, we used to build model airplanes. And I can remember he had one that had 4,000 parts on it. We worked all year putting that thing together. Took it out, flew it for 30 seconds, it crashed, and that was it. I mean, it just did a loop-de-loop, and that was it. Right now, for me, I've kind of gone back a little. See, I'm building three remote control airplanes. Mm-hmm. Almost got all of them done. I mean, needs a little work on this one, a little work on that one, you know. It's just that I kind of got tired. I kind of got burned out. And maybe this winter when the snow's coming, I don't have anything to do, I'll complete them up. But I look at them and I say, you know, hey, for a 70-year-old guy, that's a pretty nice looking damn airplane, you know? I'm surprised that I could still do it. And it looks as nice as any of them I've ever seen, you know?
Okay.
So the guy said, what you gonna do with it? I said, one goes to my youngest son, one goes to my oldest son. I've got one, I'm not gonna fly it, it's just gonna be there in case one of them crashes, tears up his, I got another one to go to. Well, listen, it's nice talking to you, okay?
It's nice talking to you. Thanks.